You better cut that out.
This dude's all right.
Welcome to the family. Oh my God. Welcome to another edition of the Nomite Podcast. My name is Mitch Maxine. If you've got any comments or questions, please send them along to my personal Facebook page, the Nomite Podcast Facebook page, or my Nomite Podcast email address, which is nomitepodcast2021@gmail.com. Here we go again. It's been a few weeks longer than normal. I think it's been, what, 3 weeks this time? Hey, guys, welcome. Let's go around the table, say hi to everybody that's here. Let's start with the boring, same old crowd. Bob, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I hope everybody else is here, too. Good to meet Mark, and looking forward to his input.
Lenny, how you doing, buddy?
Good to be back. Yeah, it seems like a really long time since we've recorded one. I know the listeners get it every 2 weeks, but we're going to step ahead. And nice to meet Mark, and intrigued because we have no idea of the talking points. Well, some of us have no idea of the talking points tonight, so I'm really ready, waiting to dive into this one.
Darren, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, same as Lenny there, just missing it again. It does seem like a long time. I would have preferred Friday, but obviously everybody was busy. Last week, I think people were busy, so it is what it is, and we're on to it now tonight. Looking forward to it.
And folks, tonight we've got a new member of the crowd, Mark Engelhart. Mark runs a couple of clubs in Ontario, one in Campbellford and one in Brighton, I believe. Mark, how you doing, man? Say hi to the nice people.
Hi, everybody. How are you doing? Yeah,
hey, listen,
I do
I,
run
can I
two.
Jump in? Yep. Mark, what rank?
Jesus,
are you
fucking starting already.
Wait, see, some things haven't changed.
I have heard the podcast about ranking, so I won't go there. I'm a third degree black belt in Shotokan karate. Like Mitch has been down to my clubs before. We kind of just, whenever someone comes in with something that works, we add it into what we do. So we're just about working out and having fun.
Okay, folks, tonight's podcast topics, if you listen to the podcast at all, you know the last three or four topics we had were pretty controversial, fairly heavy. So tonight we're going to go a little on the lighter side. Bob's made up a bunch of talking points, and they're just general martial arts type questions. So we're just going to start at the top. We'll go through them. We'll go around the table a couple of times, see what everyone's got to say. So here's the first one. All right. And by the way, Mark, I wanted to take a moment and say thank you for coming on the podcast. Much appreciated. Love it when people come on the podcast. So it's nice to have you.
My pleasure. I've been listening to your podcast, and I'm really intrigued with all the podcasts that you've had so far that I've had a chance to listen to. So I'm really
excited.
Well,
we're very intriguing.
Actually, I'm looking forward to getting an added perspective on things too, as well, because we kind
absolutely,
of bounce the
yeah,
ideas
yeah.
off of each other. We kind of have a general idea of what each other is thinking to a certain extent. So it's right. Nice to have somebody else with it. Well, yeah. Even if it's the same opinion, it's still nice to hear other versions.
Yeah,
I'm so bored with the way things have been going so far.
Well, that's not what I was saying.
Exactly. We already know how full of shit each other are. It's nice to have someone else that we can see how full of shit they are, too.
So my wife doesn't really like my opinions much, so I'm glad that you guys are interested in it.
Yeah, Mark's just coming on the podcast to get someone to listen to him.
Very much
that
so.
That remains to be seen.
Okay, so let's start with the first question. Here we go. Let's start at the top. So we'll go in the order of Lenny, Darren, then Mark, then Bob, then me, because Bob and I already know the topics. So let's get the perspectives of the people who haven't heard the questions first, just to put
you on the spot. So what you really mean is Lenny, Bob, me, Bob, you, Bob, Mark, Bob.
Exactly.
No, exactly. it's going to be Bob, Lenny, Bob, Darren, Bob, Mark, Bob, Mitch, Bob.
Note to self, don't interrupt people. Okay, I got it.
So here we go, the first talking point. If you were to take up another martial art, and it's got to be one that you've never had even one class in, what martial art would it be and why?
I'm trying to think what I have.
Yeah,
what
hasn't Lenny done yet?
What have I not tried? Jesus, that's really tough.
Mitch,
There you go.
Hey,
that's Bob, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm trying to make it easier on the other guys if you left.
I know. I was thinking that too. Why don't Bob and I go first? Because we've had a little time to think about these. Okay, so Bob, what martial art that you've never even had one class in would you like to try and why?
I've tried a lot. Like, I'm old. These days, it's the aesthetics of the martial of the different martial arts that I'm more interested in than the practicality, for sure. I mean, I've taken the only MMA I've taken is what the concepts of that you've had me practice, and fun as they are, I kind of like to enjoy the atmosphere, the aesthetics of what I'm doing, and I'm thinking it might be a Japanese archery.
Oh, I didn't even think of that one. Thank you for bringing that up. By the way, just to comment on one point that you made, Bob, you said now you're more interested in the aesthetics than you are in practicality. I went through a very weird cycle coming up through my time in the martial arts. I never cared about practicality. It was never important to me. But as I'm getting older now, I'm finding my thoughts turning more and more toward practicality.
Really?
And thinking, if it's not practical, it's a waste of my time. It's a really weird cycle I've gone through. But anyway, so Bob, did you want to comment more on the Japanese archery?
Yeah, it was a tie. It was kind of a tie between that and Iaido. When I was doing kendo for, a year and a half or 2 years, there was an Iaido club practicing at the same time and in the same gymnasium, and it had the same sort of aesthetic appeal to me, and the intensity with which they were making the techniques perfect, etc. The archery, I don't know, it's got a flair about it, and maybe I'm a little too close to the Iaido because they were practicing beside me when I was doing the kendo, so. In order to say, I've had maybe too much contact with that in order for it to qualify, because we said you can't even have taken a class in it. So I'm going to say the archery.
Since we decided that Bob and I would go first, I'll take the next one. Man, I totally forgot about Kudo. That Kudo is the Japanese name for Japanese archery. I've wanted to get into that. I don't know if you remember, Bob, but I actually called the club in Toronto where they teach that, but there was like a 9-month waiting list to get in for a 6-week course, and at the end of the course they would evaluate you and decide whether you were worthy of being moved into the actual training, and I just didn't have the patience to wait. I was moving or something. I don't remember what happened, but man, I can't believe I completely forgot about Japanese archery. So I'm going to go back to the answer that I would have had prior to that, and I'm going to talk about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I've done judo and groundwork in judo, which is very, very much a stepbrother, I think, to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I've rolled with guys who have done BJJ, but I've never actually taken a class in it. I love the the chess match that Brazilian
Jiu-Jitsu is. Does a seminar count as a fucking class? Like, you can go to a one-hour class, or you can go to a two-hour seminar.
Thing is, I've never even taken a... Oh, no, Darren, actually, you did a seminar back when you were in Peterborough. I took a couple of classes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
God damn it. Okay, so I can't do BJJ.
Oh, you can.
All right, thank you, because I got nothing else. That's all I could think of. But I'm going to rework my answer anyway, and I'm going to bail on that because I've always wanted to do... I love archery anyway. Like, I've got a bunch of bows and arrows, like actual archery level, bows and arrow archery level. Jesus. I mean, not toys, actual archery weapons. Thank you, Lenny. And they're lovely, and I love archery. There used to be an archery club here in Peterborough that I would go to every couple of months and just spend a couple hours shooting. So I loved archery for decades now, and Bob and my dad and I used to shoot around at the farm we used to live on when we were teenagers. And when I found out about Japanese archery, the aesthetic of it and the absolute serene and calm perspective that the archers seem to have when they're taking their shots always really appealed to me. So that's going to have to be my answer.
Yeah, I had to go think about this one. There was one that I kind of watched the seminar on 1 year ago, and it was pretty. It's Cambodian. It's a Bokator. It's called, and it was used by the Khmer armies. And I think when the whole Pol Pot revolution, the Khmer Rouge, it was one of their fighting practical things. It's very close quarter. It's a very close quarter combat, and it would involve a lot of practical stuff. But it takes in kind of similar ground stuff to BJJ, and even brings in a little bit crossover to Cali with weapons as well. So it's kind of an all round encompassing one. But by all accounts, it's really practical and pretty brutal.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah, me from neither. Cambodia.
Well, I did some time with the Khmer Rouge. I remember. I've killed a number of individuals. Anyway,
you lost anyway, a couple okay. fingers, didn't you?
I believe so. Yes. Anyway, Darren,
you wrecked it because I've always wanted to do Cali the Screamer, and I took a class in it, but that's as far as I got. I went out and I bought the Cali sticks, and I fully intend on continuing on and everything, and I never did. But having taken a class, that kind of, and I went to a seminar one time. So that kind of wrecks that. But the other thing I've always wanted to try is Kung Fu, like old-style Kung Fu, like Wing Chun or whatever, like where they have the Wing Chun dummy and stuff like that. I've always been, I've seen guys use that like on YouTube and stuff, and I find it really intriguing, the techniques that they use on the dummy and the speed they could do. It looks practical to me, and I'm with Mitch on that I've always been in it for the practicalities of stuff. I've always been interested in it, at least to try it. Whether I like it or not, or whether it's practical, I don't care. It's something that I've always wanted to try.
It's funny.
Can I tell
how long
story?
Ago? Are you going to tell the wooden practice dummy story? Sorry, Bob, I couldn't hear you.
Yes,
he said.
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
So, Mitch, for how many years had a practice dummy in your basement? And I think I made you the first one. It was like the middle part, like the torso, was like a 6x6 piece of lumber. And
it was a railroad tie. Yeah, it was a railroad tie. I think so, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. I drilled holes in it and glued or screwed baseball bats into them for the arms and the leg type things. And Mitch broke it. but you got another one after that, didn't you? Like, you tell a story after that.
After getting some practice in on the one that Bob had made for me, I loved that thing. I used to work out on that thing like half an hour a day.
Did you fuck around with it, or did you know the sequences or the moves that they actually teach for it?
I looked up as much as I could. The internet wasn't quite as expansive as it is today, but I found some instructional stuff. But a lot of it was moving your arms and legs in a flowing manner. Like, I'm sitting here in front of a mic and I'm moving my arms like a big idiot. But I did the best I could. I'll leave it at that. And after that, the one that Bob made gave way. When I was married, my ex-wife, Angie, she bought me an actual wooden practice dummy. And I had that thing for years. And I love that thing, man.
Yeah,
like,
I just thought about that.
Even in terms, whether I was, whether it was practical in terms of any kind of application to a real fight, I loved it for the conditioning. My forearms, elbows, everything, like palms. It was, I loved that thing. Anyway.
Good input, Darren. I hadn't even thought of going through.
Okay, Mark.
It's really hard that you said I couldn't have any initial type of experience with it, because I don't know if you remember, about 5 years ago, I invited a whole bunch of practitioners down to the club, and it was the celebration of martial arts, and we did Kung Fu, we did Kali, we did Jiu-Jitsu, we did a little bit of everything. And loved it. But I think for me, over the years, I've done a lot of really aggressive martial arts, but Tai Chi. I think for me, Tai Chi, the cerebral part of it is what I would really love to get into.
You know, that's interesting, because I've had some very limited experience with Tai Chi, and I don't. And maybe, Mark, you can enlighten me if you've had any experience with Tai Chi. I don't see anything that Tai Chi offers that Kata doesn't, which is why I never bothered to explore Tai Chi. Like, my initial experiences with it, I went to kind of a half hour, 45 minute seminar. I think, Bob, at De Lima's Club way back in the day, they had a Tai Chi guy come in. I found it, at the time, I found it remarkably dull and completely uninspiring. And then in years since, I've kind of gone back and wondered, did I really give it a fair shot? And I've watched a lot of Tai Chi videos, and my understanding of the origins of Tai Chi was never about martial endeavors. It was always about health and movement in terms of individual, you know, circulation and all that stuff. So I've been trying to think of, or trying to find out, does Tai Chi offer something that kata doesn't? And I'm just wondering, Mark, if you have any insights into that.
I think it does. One of the things that really changed my outlook on kata was doing Iaido. When I was doing Iaido, it was trying to get that perfection of movement. And that was something that was slightly different than I'd ever seen before. Like, there is no trying to have the hard, fast, snappy technique, because that just doesn't work with Iaido. So you have to have the perfect motion, the perfect movement. The sword itself, the Iaido, if you don't have the perfect movement, it will not sing. And I think that...
Sorry, I got to jump in there, Mark. I don't understand what that phrase means.
Oh, the sword itself has what's referred to as the he, which is your, well, some people refer to it as a blood groove. But if the sword doesn't move at the right angle, at the right pace, you won't get a whistling noise off of the sword. And that whistling noise is the song of the sword. And if you don't get that, you haven't perfected the slice or the cut. It was really interesting. I got a chance to cut tatami mats with a shinkan, which is a sharpened sword. So I got to experience all of that, but the cerebralness of Iaido is what really drew me into it. And that's what's giving me the impetus to try something like Tai Chi, because kata is very hard and you've got that snap and focus. And you get to a point where you're just perfecting small individual motion, but you've still got that snap and focus. With Tai Chi, there's always the perfection of movement, and that to me is what intrigues me.
But isn't that just a matter of perspective? I mean, can you not shift the perspective? Take any kata, I don't care what kata you want to choose. If you want to shift your perspective on the kata from the hard, snappy, focused way that we are trained to do kata, and put more of a, and you'll forgive the phrase, I hope, Tai Chi perspective on it, can you not gain the same benefits from kata just by changing your perspective on it, rather than walking down an entirely... What I'm wondering is, like, what you just said, to me, it sounds like a matter of perspective as opposed to a matter of style. I'm still looking for something that Tai Chi offers that karate or kata doesn't.
Well, Tai Chi, if done correctly, Tai Chi is intended to be physical fitness. So it's not physical fitness for someone of a younger age. As you get older, it's something that you can do even if you get into your 80s and 90s. But it still gives you that range of motion. It gives you the flexibility. But it's the cerebralness of it that really is what I'm interested in. And I try to do different martial arts to see their perspective on things. So I know my perspective with Shotokan Karate. So when I get a chance to do Taekwondo or get a chance to do Jiu-Jitsu, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I try to really just envelop myself in that art and their perspectives of that art. So the perspective of Tai Chi is something that I'm interested in. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah. No, but I understand. No, I understand the notion of wanting to get into a different mindset. Absolutely. So I don't want to, like, I don't want to challenge that. That's absolutely a perfectly valid reason to want to spread your wings, right? Okay, this just came to me, and I want to go around the table one more time. The naysayer that I am is going to bring up this talking point, leveraging off the last one. So we'll start with Bob. if there was one other martial art that you absolutely would not want to do ever, what is it and why, Bob?
Holy crap.
I've got like six, so
go ahead. Yeah, you want my list?
Oh, okay. I'll just say ninjutsu and leave it at that.
No, you got to say why. You got to say why.
Oh, because it's stupid.
But okay, let's go down the list because this is a new one for all of us. Lenny, a martial art you don't ever want to try and why?
Anything that's no touch bullshit. I think that speaks for itself as to why, because it's not a martial art. We won't mention the elusive George. Possibly Aikido. I find it just a little bit. I don't like the impracticality, and I'm sure Aikido practitioners might pull me on that one and know.
That's me. Fuck you.
It just doesn't appeal to me.
Wait a sec. No, this is a good point. Bob has got his black belt in Aikido, and I don't think Bob would argue the practicality side of that at all. Oh, or am I wrong?
I completely agree with Lenny on that.
Darren, what martial art would you not want to try and why?
You know what? Oddly enough, I was trying to think of one, and I think I'd like to try everything once and then kind of form an opinion. And I can't think of anything off the top of my head that I would blatantly refuse to at least give it a go and see.
Goddamn Darren and his level-headedness.
I know, right? Fucking
like I just honestly, I can't think of anything that I would just flat out refuse to do. Like, I think
even if George offered you a seminar,
I'd fucking love to do one of them seminars, even if it was just to prove the wrong. But yeah, no, I'd be open to pretty much anything just to give it a shot and see and a lot of things, like even Aikido. I don't know how long I did it for. But there are definitely practical stuff you can get out of Aikido. And even just some of the joint manipulations, if you were doing security, those joint manipulations were perfect for stuff like that. You don't want to smash someone in the face trying to get them out of a bar, but some of the little locks and stuff they do in Aikido would work perfectly for that. So even the non-practical martial arts, you can still form practical applications out of that. It's like taking a kata. If you don't 27 movements, or not 27 movements, say Zen Shinkotai or something like that. It's pretty useless in its like original form, but you can take applications out of it and make something out of it. So I think even probably Tai Chi, even you can probably grab something out of that to make a practical application. So yeah, no, I'd be into trying everything at least once.
So no, nothing. There's no martial art that
unfortunately
just
no. No, I can't think of one, no.
Fair enough. Okay, Mark.
You know what? You're probably going to be pretty ticked off at me because I have to agree with Darren on this one. Remember what I said to you about doing that celebration of martial arts? That was not a thing I did to, you know, introduce all my students. That was for me. That was completely for me. I absolutely love the martial arts. And even though Qigong is... that's the no-touch stuff. I would be having a hard time believing any of that. It would still be interesting to see where their point of view is, where they're thinking this actually works. And the psychological aspect of it, where the sensei is so revered that nobody wants to be the guy that doesn't fall down. That whole thought process beyond there, you know, that I've watched a lot of videos on the psychological aspects of those martial arts, where basically, especially with the Japanese culture, you do not want to be the guy that's different, so you just follow along, and they start believing in their own infallibility, and it's interesting.
The martial art that's based on kiai, where you yell, and that takes them down.
Oh, yellow bamboo.
Is that what that is?
What? Yellow bamboo.
Lenny, if you haven't seen these videos, look them up, man. Not now, but look up. Go to YouTube and look up yellow bamboo. I know, right? I tried to stop them.
Sounds like some kind of tropical disease.
It's. It's astoundingly ridiculous.
There's a lot of astoundingly ridiculous things you can find online. The one the martial art where all they do is they throw punches like a 1970s NBA player. They're just doing this windmill thing. And they go, yeah, you would just attack the other person with multiple punches until they can't stop us.
And yeah, I'm not sure if that's a style, though. If that's it's a martial art.
It's a style of karate, unfortunately.
No. Here, can I tell a quick story?
Yeah, Darren, go.
When I was in Victoria on Vancouver Island, and I was training at this karate club, and I was friends with one of the black belts there, and they went to a seminar somewhere around Seattle or something like that. And it wasn't a George Dillon seminar, but it was something along them lines. I don't really know how to explain it. But I didn't go because I thought it was bullshit. And that guy went. And I ran into him one day after being back from the seminar, and I was asking him how it was and everything. He said it was really good. It was really enlightening. And I'm like, come on. I thought that was pretty ridiculous. And he said, no. He goes, there were aspects of it that were bizarre. And he goes, but I actually got some cool shit out of it. And I remember saying, well, like what? Like it has to be bullshit. And he says, well, just for example, and he goes, throw a punch at me. And I literally went in to throw a punch, and no word of a lie, my arm did go off target, and I went sideways, and he didn't do anything. He just stood there looking at me. And I remember thinking, what the fuck was that? And he goes, I know, eh? And I'm like, what do you mean you know? Like, what did you do? And I forget now, this is going back 25 years, so I can't really remember. But I said, let me do that again now that I know what's going on. And I swear to God, I went to throw it again, and he just lifted his hand, and my arm went off to the side. I'm totally 100% serious.
Could that have been, Darren, though, could that have been your unwillingness to actually punch him in the face?
No, because we were sparring partners. Like, I punched him in the face in class. Like,
but how do you account for that? How do you account for that?
I did, and it's going so far back, I can't, because I did discuss it with him afterward, and he did talk about what they did and all this shit, but I can't remember, it was too long ago. But there was, I wanted to go, like, Dillman aside, I did want to go to some kind of seminar that explored that kind of shit, just to see, like, what is it? Is it just a placebo, or is it legitimate that you can... I'm not saying control somebody, but even almost like fainting. Like maybe he did something with his arm. Do you know what I mean? That I didn't notice because I was just concentrating on hitting the target. But just a little feint he did with his arm. Like I'm not saying he had the power of mind like a Jedi to make me move the target. But you know yourself, if you go to throw a punch and someone does something with their leg, you'll drop your arm instinctively.
Yeah, yeah.
To block the leg. And I think it was just something like that. Like, as I was going to throw the punch, he moved his arm in a way that just made me react subconsciously. But that was the whole kind of premise of whatever seminar they went to.
Okay, so I think everybody's talked about the martial art they wouldn't want to try. I just want to throw my two cents in there. The one I have is absolutely a valid style of karate. It's got quite a following. There are tournaments all over the place. I just can't figure out. I just can't wrap my head around it. And that's Kyokushin. It makes no sense to me.
You can't punch to the face or anything?
Yeah. And that's like they do full contact tournaments, but the rule, like, and I've got to admit, I look up a lot of conditioning videos, and one of my favorite conditioning, or a bunch of my favorite conditioning exercises I get from Kyokushin. They're absolute, like, these are some tough motherfuckers. These guys aren't kidding around. They throw their punches and they throw them hard, but the tournament rules are no punches to the face, but kicks to the face are absolutely allowed. And that just never made any sense to me. Look, if I stood in front of any one of you guys and you said to me, look, I'll either punch you in the face or kick you in the face, I'll take a punch in the face any day of the week over a kick in the face. So the rules in Kyokushin, pardon me, just don't make any sense to me. I just don't understand it.
Toe-to-toe.
Right, yeah. There's no war blocking. Of attrition. Nobody blocks. It's just you stand there. And you, like, no kidding. Like, watch these guys fight. No one's blocking anything. You're just standing there. Winging punches into the body as hard as you can until somebody does a flying spinning wheel kick and takes the guy's head off. I just don't get it. It just doesn't make sense to me. So if I had to choose one that I wouldn't do, I'm torn. I'd love to do a lot of the conditioning that they do in Kyokushin, but I just, the tournaments make no sense to me. So anyway.
I've got a Kyokushin guy training with me. I've got to get him on the podcast to have a chat about this with you.
Nice. Anyone want to say anything about the first talking point 35 minutes in?
I'd like to commend Bob for being incredibly restrained.
Hey, a little nice. Credit. Nice.
Well done. Bob's not used to positive feedback.
I'm also not used to not interrupting.
The second talking point we're going to go through, it's fairly benign, but it's interesting, and I'm curious to get your guys' perspective on it. This will take us to the break. And again, because Bob and I have heard these before, Bob will go first, I'll go second, then we'll go down the line. We've all been through hellishly arduous classes, and we remember those especially tough episodes. Describe an especially tough or arduous time that you've physically, that you've endured in the martial arts, and just talk about it. What was it like? Bob, go ahead.
The first thing that came to mind to me is just a little story, and it's a bit comical, so that's why I think it came to mind first. It's when I first started in kendo. When you first start, you don't wear the actual uniform. You just wear a t-shirt. Anyway, we were doing some exercises, and we were getting warmed up, and I was getting sweaty, and I'm one of those guys who sweats like a pig when he exercises hard. So I was pretty soaked. And then we started an exercise, which everybody here is familiar with, where the whole beginners, there must have been a dozen of us, lie flat on the floor on your stomach. Without using your legs, you put your arms ahead of you, and you pull yourself forward using only the power of your arms. Simple enough, except I was soaked with sweat, and while everyone else was progressing, either quickly or slowly, depending on what shape they were in, every time I sincerely tried to pull myself forward, my arms just slid on the floor, and I could not move. And I was struggling there like a beached walrus, trying to pull myself forward, absolutely determined, absolutely frustrated, and absolutely obvious that I would not be able to do this. And all these different emotions were going through my head at the time. And of course, I couldn't give up. Of course, I had to keep going in this stupid show of futility.
I'd pay $1,000. I would pay $1,000.
I'm already visualizing it. I'm already visualizing
Bob, it. Bob awash in a pool of sweat trying to move forward.
And of course I couldn't give up. And of course the teacher couldn't say stop, because it's a toughness exercise. You can't just say, take it easy, dude. Eventually, I don't know how much time elapsed, but the class was called to do something else, so I was able to get up. But that
the
fucking
class, we can't I'll waste never, any more time on this.
I'll never forget that. Anyway, that's my first one.
Okay. So mine is when I was testing, or when I was prepping for my black belt grading. This is back at the Queen Alex building. I'm sure Darren and I don't know Bob. Bob, you were there for a while.
Oh yeah.
I was getting ready. I was in the running for my black belt. I was a couple of months away from the test. And we went outside. And now, keep in mind, this is back when the classes were 2 to 2.5 hours long. We didn't have like 45 minute or an hour and a half. These were 2 hours minimum, often bleeding over into 2.5 hours. And it was the middle of summer, so we went outside and we're working out on the grass just outside this community center. And the head instructor at the time, Mark Bell, he comes over to me and he says, Mitch, I want you to go and just get into a kneeling position at the base of that tree. I didn't know what was going on. And this is about 10 minutes into the class, probably. So I go over and I kneel down at this tree, at the base of this tree, and I stayed there for a solid 2 hours. And I don't know if anybody has experience with kneeling down and not moving for 2 hours. Jesus. It was the most physically arduous thing. to get through that 2 hour class, not being allowed to move. I remember the agony washing through my legs as I tried to stay in that kneeling position. After about an hour and 15 minutes, your legs go numb, so it's not so bad after that. The cherry on the parfait, as it were, was when the class was over and Mark Bell said, "All right, get up." And I couldn't. Like, my legs were, from the hips down, absolutely numb and no muscular control at all. I don't want to exaggerate. It must have taken me 10 minutes to drag myself to my feet and try to walk back into the change room to get changed. That was probably the most physically arduous thing I've ever had to experience. Now, before we go on to Lenny, you're next, so get your story ready. I want to relate a story about Bob that sticks out in my memory. A couple of decades ago, Bob was living in Toronto. I was living in Peterborough. I don't know where my rank was, but we were both Bob had his black belt before I ever started, and I'm not sure where in that whole chronology this happened. But Bob came up.
This is going to be my second story. Go ahead.
Bob came up to Peterborough to visit, and we went back to my place just to goof around and hang out. We were going to go party or whatever, but I had to have a workout. So I was doing weights pretty heavily at the time, which I still do. And my workout was about an hour long, maybe 50 minutes, an hour long. So I said, "I'm going to have a workout in my apartment." And Bob said, "Okay." So while I was working out, when I started, Bob put himself in a horse stance. And he stayed in that horse stance for that entire workout. I don't want to exaggerate it. It was at least 50 minutes, might have been an hour. And every now and then I'd look over at Bob. And as the workout progressed, his body was quivering a little bit more each minute that the workout passed. But kudos to the guy. He stayed in that horse stance for that entire time. And I don't think I've ever seen anything more physically impressive than that. I'll never forget that.
It was 51 minutes and 17 seconds.
And I find it extremely interesting that Bob knows the exact amount of time.
No.
Oh, you son of a bitch. Will never forget that. It was really, really impressive. Anyway, Lenny, go.
There's been a good few, but I think the one that probably has to stick out in my mind the most was I was on the running towards black belt. I think it was my final brown belt test. And we had changed halls that we trained in, and the floor in the new hall was just really old. It was an old school, and it was just really rough, old varnish floor. It was like training on sandpaper almost. But for about 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, we basically go down to train 4 nights a week, and he'd basically take us for a 4 kilometer run as physically as hard as you could beforehand, and then it was in and doing all kind of stuff on the bare floor, your bare feet, back out for another run. And it culminated at the end of this 4 weeks of just being beaten for that time. When I got out to do my katas on the night, my first cat of parts of it, it was about a 3 hour grade for this. The balls of my feet under my big toe, both of them split and physically came off my feet. And I was left with raw, bloody flesh underneath. I'd say 2 minutes into the grade. And they saw what was going on. And I said to the head guy instructing, I said, "Can I bandage these up?" And he went, "Nope. You leave the floor, you fail your grade." And I had to do the entire grade with bloody feet. And I remember that night, tried even trying to use the clutch and accelerator on my car going home. And it was just, it was like putting your feet in a bath of acid. It was just horrible.
Darren.
How am I supposed to fucking top that? mine seems so fucking insignificant. Actually, I wanted to say one thing, based on your thing, Mitch. Do you remember, I don't know if you were in the class that night, but it was also Queen Alexander School. It was a Monday night class, and Tony Jones had gotten a fight at a bar on the Friday or Saturday night. Yeah. And I don't even know if it was his fault, but it didn't matter. Our whole ethos was you don't get in a fight. And the instructor made him go to the back of the class and kneel down. and he had to do that for the whole class. And I remember at the end, he told him to get up, and he could not get up.
I remember.
And that was only that was about half the time that you just said you did it for.
Yeah,
I think the class was only about an hour and a half, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah, I remember that very well. I my respect for Tony jumped about 100
points. I was thinking the same thing too. Like,
yeah,
he actually sat up. I don't know. I remember at that night thinking, if that was me, I would have got up after about probably 15, 20 minutes and just said, I'm packing it. Because the instructor said, if you get up, you're out of this club.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I probably would have taken that and just fucked off out of the club. I would not have been able to endure that.
Fuck this shit.
Yeah, Darren. Fuck you and everybody.
As soon as this topic was introduced, Darren, I had to think of the students who were in a class that you took. I wasn't there. I only got this from, third-party, stories. But the frostbite incident.
Yeah, but that was
I remember we heard about that one.
It wasn't an arduous thing.
No, that was. Plus, nobody felt it till the next day. Like we all.
Yeah, and I wasn't forcing anybody to do anything. We just all kind of did it. We didn't know the consequences at the time, so it wasn't really arduous at the time. We just
let's not
through it.
Darren, describe one that comes to mind that you've been through.
So I got two, and they were in tournament settings, and my cardio has never been the best ever. I remember one tournament I was extremely hungover. I didn't even want to be there. I was kind of forced into it, and I just thought, well, that's fine. I'll lose my first fight, then I can go relax, and I ended up winning the fight. And after the fight, I went straight to the toilet, and I puked my guts out, and I thought, fuck, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this again. And then my name was called for the second fight. I'm like, well, surely I'm not going to win this one. And I ended up winning that one, and then straight to the toilet, puked my guts out. And it was horrible. And then the next fight was for first and second, and it just seemed to go on forever. Like, I didn't do as good the first two fights, and for some reason, I was good at defending myself, so the other guy couldn't score points. And I was losing. And at the time, I think Paul White was one of either the head ref or the corner ref. And he pulled me over and he said, get your shit together. Like, this is embarrassing. You can take this guy, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right. And I went in and the other guy scored a point and I lost. So after going through all that, I fucking lost in the end anyway. And it was. And then I remember, again, my dad coming up, who was the head instructor, came up to me afterward and just read me the riot act. That was embarrassing, blah, 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 blah. And then I had Paul White, who I respected at the time, tell me the same thing. And that was horrible. And then fast forward many years later, again, I was in a tournament in Vancouver. And I wasn't hungover this time. I was actually taking it seriously. But just for whatever reason, my cardio wasn't the same as everybody else's. And when you watch the UFCs now, and you watch somebody in a simple 15-minute fight or whatever, and either one guy's losing his cardio and he loses the fight, or both guys lose their cardio, and it just looks like two amateurs. And everybody in the audience is going, oh, this is embarrassing. Like, fuck, they just look like sloppy messes. But having gone through situations where you're sparring with someone and your cardio is not there, but you can't quit and you're forced to endure it, it's like the hardest thing ever to try not to get hit and try to kind of do any kind of an offense, but you just physically can't. Like, your muscles don't move, your arms don't move. And to me, that's one of the most excruciating things, is to try to stay alive. I know it's not alive, it's just in a tournament or a sparring situation, but at that moment, like, somebody's raining down punches or kicks and stuff, and you're trying to defend yourself, and you physically, it's taken every little bit of effort to continue on in however long until the point's scored or until someone calls stop or whatever. And then I have a huge appreciation now when you watch the fighters in any ring, but I'll just use the UFC as an example, where they just look like shit. And you're like, oh, their cardio sucks. That's embarrassing. But their cardio is actually brilliant. It's just that when you put that much effort in and it drains you to that extent, you just don't have it.
Okay. Mark, go ahead.
All right. Mine's kind of like Darren's. A few years ago, I had a surgery. I had a hernia surgery, and my cardio had started to go away for obvious reasons. And I had just started getting back into to working out, and I got invited to do some randori up in Peterborough, which is rolling in a jiu-jitsu class. And it was an open class. There was multitudes of people there. And I was doing pretty good, but I'm about 25 pounds overweight, and my cardio sucks. So I'm like, nope. I'm going to do this. This is all good. So I ended up fighting a black belt there that was, maybe 70 pounds lighter than me. And I got him on the ground. I'm like, okay, I can dominate him. Put him on the ground, and all of a sudden, his foot comes up between us. And I'm like, I've got him by the hands, and I can't do anything with this foot. And he ended up choking me out with a shin to the throat. And I'm like, okay, not a problem. So we go again. Did about three times, and he did the same move on me all three times, and there was nothing I could do to stop him. So I'm like, okay, this sucks. So then I go, I'm at this point, I've tried everything, so now I am completely gassed. And the sensei goes, I'd like you to spar this young gentleman I have here, and he's in his early 20s, and he's a blue belt. And he goes, I'd like you to spar him. And I'm like, okay. At this point, I can barely lift my arms. So I'm like, let's go. So we started, and I got him on the ground, and I put my chest on his chest, and I held him there, and I whispered in his ear, I am really sorry, but I can't do anything. I am so sorry. And I'm laughing my ass off, because I'm thinking, this is so embarrassing. And the sensei is looking down at him going, look at him. He's having so much fun. You should be doing the same thing. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. I am so, so sorry. And you could see this kid. He was so embarrassed and he was so mad. And I'm like, yeah, as much as I really feel sorry for you, you're not tapping me out. We are not going there. So I just did enough to keep him off me. And just for a good 2-3 minutes, I laid on his chest and just kept him there. And yeah, that was probably
just
one
laid
of the most,
on him.
Yep, that just pretty much.
I laid on him with my weight, held him yes. down.
Yeah, every time he tried something, I'm like, nope, you can't do that. Nope, you can't. But I didn't have enough energy to actually do any techniques.
Do anything. That's hilarious. All right, guys, look, we're about 55 minutes in. Let's take a break. I'll tell you what the next question is now, so you can ponder it over the break. I could do a whole 2 hours on this next one without you guys saying a word. So here it is. What techniques in your style do you wish you could change? Oh, dear God. Okay.
Holy fuck. All of them?
All right. But we need to talk about individual techniques and justification and all that stuff. So that's
are we
the
gonna
question.
Pick, I think we need to be a little bit more specific on that topic. Yeah. Would it be based on practicality?
That's the question. Let's take a break, and we'll break it down after we come back. All right, guys, we're on a break. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Okay, folks, we're back from the break. We're going to go on to the third talking point, which is which techniques in your style do you wish you could change? And again, because we're dropping these and everybody out of the blue, Bob and I will go first, and then we'll go Len, Darren, Mark. So, Bob, what techniques in your style do you wish you could change?
The one that sprang to mind first is the sidekick. You bring your leg up perpendicular to the actual direction in which you're going to kick, with your shin straight up and down, and then in some weird way you rotate your hip and your leg and extend all at the same time. Why not just bring the fucking thing up with the shin pointed at the target
here,
and kick from there?
I just want to interject for a sec, Bob. I trained at a club one time that kicked exactly as you said.
Uh-huh.
And I remember thinking, oh, this is a much more effective way. But even that was not effective. Like, it's just a side kick is not an effective kick, unfortunately. It used to be my favorite kick, and it was so powerful and everything. But if you try to use it in any kind of practical application outside of just point sparring or something, it's okay. Useless.
Yeah, I don't know. Yep. I don't know. You see it in MMA, don't you?
No, you do they actually, do it to the knees a bit. You, they do it to keep somebody at bay, to work out distance and stuff like that. But I've never seen anybody land one that puts anybody in any kind of danger.
Yeah, I'm going to come in.
That's only because I've never entered the octagon. I mean,
that could be exactly.
Another thing would be $1,000 to see.
My brother turned into mush. anyway, that's my first one.
Okay. I want to take a stab at this, but this is a really complex question for me, and forgive me for going on at length about this. I'm a stickler for nuance. We all know, here's how you do an inside middle block, here's how you do an outside middle block, here's how you step in a front stance, blah, blah, blah. But the thing that fascinates me, has always fascinated me, and continues to challenge and fascinate me to this day, is the nuance of motion through those techniques. So when we say, what techniques in our style, in my style, or the style I practice, do I wish I could change? The nuance of any technique has, and I'm not exaggerating, has literally never been explained to me. So the nuance of when my hip turns relative to when my body shifts, not only when the hip turns, but what direction does the hip move relative to whatever technique I'm doing. That's stuff I've had to figure out and explore on my own, because no one ever talks about nuance of techniques, the subtlety.
Just rubbed
of
all
the
my
techniques.
Shit, Mitch.
Sorry, Len. Sorry, brother.
We're gonna roll here.
But so when we talk about what techniques in the style do I want to change, I've got to break that down first by saying, could somebody please define how the techniques are done? Because nobody does. I mean, I know how I do them, and I spend a lot of time in my head trying to figure this stuff out. Like, let me give you a very quick example. In our style, when we step forward into a front stance with a low block, we rotate our hips as we step forward. Our leading leg, my leading hip in line with that leg, is in front of my rear hip. And as I turn my body to perform the low block, my back hip rotates square to the direction I'm facing as I do the low block. That's how we do it. I think that's completely fucked. It's impractical. It gives you a certain amount of power, but that's all it gives you. There's no practicality with that motion. And it's not even overtly stated that that's how it's done. I believe, and this is where I'm going to come in on Shotokan's side here, if I'm stepping forward in the front stance with a low block, I'm going to perform that low block and drop my back hip backward. And I think I get way more power and much more rotation on a reverse punch coming out of that. So what techniques do I wish we could change? Hip rotation, how we do side kicks, how we do inside middle blocks, directional movement. I would like to basically rewrite our style because, frankly, I think our style is fucked from the ground up. Lenny, how you doing, buddy?
Like you, Mitch, this is a huge question for me to answer because I've gone through a huge crisis of conscience with the whole style that I practice because, as you know yourself, I came from a traditional Kenpo background.
Wait, just a second. You haven't thrown it in yet. Why are you questioning this again?
Why am I questioning you?
Yeah.
Because the
He's giving you an invitation to bring up
No, 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 no. I knew it. No, no, I didn't bring it up. Even before I went there, I was having a crisis of conscience with it. Because the more I came across people who trained at the style that I profess to do, the more it's gone on, I've looked going, well, am I actually doing this? Or am I doing some kind of hybrid with traditional arts? Because I find what I see from my own style incredibly frustrating. Like you, Mitch, I went a long time ago and back started questioning the whole body mechanics of why we move in certain ways. And I remember when you guys were here a few years ago, we were fooling around after having drinks one night about little tricks of putting your foot this way, how easily you can move someone, and putting your foot another way, how hard it is to move somebody. We're messing around the kitchen in someone's house, and it was all about foot placement, body posture, body mechanics, and that part of the practicalities of a martial art works isn't explained. And the difference between somebody standing in a certain way and applying their body in a certain way, will they throw a punch this way or that way or a kick, is lost. It doesn't get explained enough, and I think to the detriment of the person training. And to knock that onto the kind of crisis I have with the style I do, because I've watched it being diluted and diluted and diluted, and now the kind of more diluted forms of what I do are the ones that you'll see mainly on YouTube. And it's near the stage where somebody asks you what style you train in, you say, embarrassingly, Kempo, but if you look on the internet, it's not what we do. Please don't judge us by what you see on YouTube. I'd need to rewrite the whole thing, like you, Mitch. And as I said, you robbed my points. The whole body mechanics of breaking down the basics of movement and dynamics of striking and defending needs to be explained better and rewritten.
Now, I just want to step in before we go to Darren, and I understand why commercial clubs with a lot of students don't go into that level, because look, what percentage of students actually give thought to that depth of technique? A very small percentage, I would think. You know, you got mostly kids and some adults, and let's be fair, most students don't dedicate themselves to thinking about stuff like this. It's a thing they do a couple of times a week, and as the instructor of that club, you have to teach a group of students who, for the most part, are just doing this thing as a thing they like to do. Very few of those students, a very small percentage of those students, actually take all of this to heart and really want to explore it and study it and understand it. And given that, it doesn't give you as the instructor much opportunity to play to those nuances, to play to that subtlety. It doesn't mean it shouldn't be explored. It absolutely should. I think any serious practitioner owes it to not only their own training, but to the development of the martial art, to challenge everything that they have been taught and say, is this the best way to do it? Shouldn't I be doing it like this? And it's that exploration exactly that led me to say what I just said. Anyway, Darren.
Funny enough, it's pretty much the same thing about the body mechanics. I enjoy the art form of karate, and when you're doing techniques like chambering your fist and turning it over at the last moment and little nuances in the stances while you move from, say, a back stance into a front stance or vice versa and stuff like that, I enjoy doing that. And if I went to take a karate class now, I would still enjoy doing that, put everything into it. But looking at it from a practical standpoint, and something like one of the things when, like getting, like say chambering your fist and then throwing it from a chamber position, and the whole idea is if you can throw that really fast from there, think of how fast you'll be if you're just holding your hands in a guard and then throwing it. And the other thing about getting in an extremely low front stance and trying to move as fast as you can to, like, put, like, if you're in a left leg forward front stance and moving as fast as you can to have your right leg forward and really low. It's fucked up my knees over the years. And the object is, if you can move really fast like that, think of how fast you can move in a natural stance. Yeah. But like I take it in drumming. I remember one time working on a double bass pattern, and they used to tell you to put weights on your feet. And if you can do the double bass with the weights on, think of how fast you'll do it with the weights off. And I remember buying into that and trying it. And then there was some scientific thing going, no. You don't practice with extra weight thinking that it'll be easier without the weight. Practice without the weight because you're going to be playing without the weight.
That's the whole thing.
So the whole thing is, don't practice in a low stance to try to move fast thinking that you'll be faster in a natural stance. Practice speed in a natural stance, because that's the natural way to fucking do it.
I've got to jump in here, and because what Darren said as he was talking over the last 3 minutes, in my head I'm going, yes, yes, oh my God, that's exactly the point I want to make. And I'm going to go back to, which techniques do I want to change in my style? Which premises, which myths do I want to debunk in our style? And that's exactly one of them. That doing it this way, in a very formal way, makes it much better to do it in a practical way. That is so much nonsense and so much crap. And I can't state it any better than Darren just did. So huge kudos and applause to Darren for thinking exactly what I was thinking. Thank you very much. Thank you and good night. Anyway.
It's not a cliche, but remember the old saying where it's like, I can't remember what it is, but you'll know it. It's like practice something.
Oh, the whole perfect practice makes perfect? Is that where you're going?
Something like, that's exactly, whatever that is. So it's like, if you're practicing a way that is not practical, that contradicts that term. And I remember in karate, when doing all those low stances and all that, the instructor would still say, practice perfect makes whatever. So if you practice wrong, and it's almost like we were practicing wrong, because you will never use that in an actual situation. So we were literally practicing it wrong.
I want to come in on the other side of that, though. Look, there are two. Let me put this out there. There are two perspectives on karate training. There's an aesthetic perspective and a practical perspective, and I have a great deal of respect for the aesthetic perspective. I love kata. It's impractical as hell. There is literally zero practical about kata. However, I think there's a lot of value to kata in terms of what it can teach you, in terms of what you can glean from it. And I think I love watching well-done kata, even if it's not practical. There is that dichotomy. There's the aesthetic of karate and there's the practicality of karate. I just don't think they cross over as much as people like to think they do. Just because you're good at the aesthetic doesn't mean you're going to be good at the practical. And practicing things to be aesthetically pleasing, low front stances, proper uchiyuki blocks. Who's ever done an uchiyuki? Very few in actual sparring. Most blocks are done from the outside, not from the inside. So why am I even doing an inside middle block? Anyway, Mark.
Okay, so that's something to follow. So, all right, so the way I do my martial art is, and you've seen this too, Mitch, when we've had discussions about technique and such, if I find a way to do something that is more effective, more useful than what I'm already doing, I will change it. To the point where kata is separate. It's a separate function to the other techniques we do. We'll do kickboxing. We'll do Muay Thai. We'll do jiu-jitsu. We'll try different things, and they don't necessarily interconnect. So I'm not going to, and I tell my students when we're doing kata, you know, the snap and focus is great, but just don't keep your hands down when you're sparring someone. That's a bad idea. And we'll go through the dichotomy between the two techniques, between the aesthetic and the practical. And I spend a lot of time with my students explaining, and I know you hate this, bunkai, behind the technique. And
I'd like to come in there for a second. I don't hate it. I just don't see the value of it.
Well, see, for me, what I use bunkai for is not so much, I definitely don't use traditional bunkai, because I was never taught all of the traditional bunkai. But what I do tell my students is the technique itself, what you're doing in that kata, what you're looking to do, look at the bunkai, it will help you self-correct. So
can I just interject for the listeners here?
Sure.
Because I'm a bit confused. Is bunkai the application of the techniques? Is that what bunkai is?
Bunkai is the application of the kata, yes.
Okay, yeah, no, sorry. Just sorry. For anybody listening, if they're not sure what's going on.
Sorry, I can't. I find it hard to hear the words application of the kata without laughing. Because there's... look,
it's not necessarily the kata. It's also when you've got like a one-on-one technique, someone throwing punch, defending, and counterattacking. It's a breakdown of that as well, so not solely. Darren, stop drumming.
Yeah, fair enough. So, but for what amuses me, let's talk about kata. When you talk about application, you sort of allude to a practical application. Here's what the kata is.
It's far removed from the aesthetic version that you're seeing. The moves are there, like, just because they're far removed from what you see in the actual performance of the kata, that there are moves. It is legitimate. Like, when someone throws a punch or a block, it's legitimate. It doesn't look like the way it does in the kata. You're totally putting it into...
Okay, but if it doesn't look like the way it does on the kata, then it's not a bunkai of the kata.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is. It's just... Oh. Fuck.
No, it's not.
I think it's just so far over the years that the kata has become such a traditional aesthetic form. That, like, I'll bet you that back in the day when they were inventing those katas, it didn't look the same as now. It looked a lot... Like, we look at it now, and it's a performance. And you're graded on or judged on that performance, and you get little points scored and everything. But if you were actually doing it in a practical form, it'd look like shit, and no one would win a tournament. So they make it all aesthetically pleasing. But in its original form, it was all practical to a certain extent.
On YouTube, they have some very old video of Okinawan kata. Okay, so what they're doing is they actually showed the bunkai with the kata, and they showed some techniques. And when you see it done that way, you go, "Oh, I see what it is."
Oh, so you mean when they take somebody and go, "Attack me this way, and I will do this," it looks really practical. Well, of course it does, because you're defining how the person's attacking you.
Yeah, but you're not... Jesus, hold on a second. You have to start somewhere. You have to have an attack. So if you're going to practice a certain attack, it is going to have to be a certain way. You can't just go here, just run at me, and I'll fucking react. There has to be practical application. So you have to say, okay, how are you going to defend against a punch? Okay, well, throw a punch at me. And then you
throw
do it that
an
way.
Actual punch. Not throw a stupid get in a front stance and I'll throw a punch at you in a front stance.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Of course.
Right.
Of course.
My point being is, I defy anybody to go into the UFC or even a street fight and be able to connect something that you see there to something that comes out of a kata. It's just not... It's not a connection that's ever made, and I'm sick... Sorry, I'm fine. It's fine.
Mitch, it's not just kata. Like, remember doing lines. Like, you do Uchiyuki in the kata, and all of a sudden we're doing it in lines.
Right.
Lines are, how fucking impractical are those fucking things?
Right. This
and
is
I used
why...
to love doing them, and I enjoyed it and everything, and if I went back to a club, I'd enjoy doing it. But for practical purposes, it's a waste
of
time.
And that's where the line needs to be drawn. If we want to talk about practicality, don't have me fucking doing lines. Don't have me doing kata. Let's actually do something that's practical. The only thing that actually lends itself to practicality on any level, and this is even a stretch, is sparring. Self-defense is nonsense. Lines is nonsense. Kata is a waste of time if your goal is practicality. Now, I don't want to downplay the other goals, aesthetics, body mechanics, just conditioning. Look, nothing conditions your arms like standing in front of Darren in a front stance and he's stepping forward and he's throwing a front punch at you and you got to block it. You're going to get some conditioning on your arms. That's awesome and absolutely valid. But don't talk to me about lines, kata, and self-defense in terms of any practical application. Wow. Whose turn is it? I'm done. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go.
But again, I think you're missing the overall usefulness of those things that we were just talking about, the lines, the kata, Because if you look at it and take it in as they're intended, when we do kata, Well, what is kata's intent, the intent for karate, kata to be? When I talk to my students, the intent for me is the muscle memory. So if you need, if you're someone throws something at you, you need to think,
Oh, God.
I need to block. But if you have the muscle memory.
Sorry, do you really want to teach your students that in a practical street fighting situation,
But
if someone throws
about.
A punch, you want the muscle memory to be able to do an uchiyuki?
Not uchiyuki, but it's...
Then where's
it's
the value of muscle memory?
The value of muscle memory is you don't think, you react, right? So,
yeah, but if you react wrong, it's not going to help you in a practical circumstance.
But if you don't react at all, you're in even more trouble.
Okay, so wait. Are we actually debating the merits of reacting wrong versus not reacting at all? I think we're both in the same shit pile there.
Here, I'll just say, if you think uchiyuki done properly, you're supposed... Remember, most blocks are supposed to be two-handed, where one hand goes into the chambered kind of position and then does the thing. If you're in a street fight, there's no chambering.
And I'm not talking about
the very nature of the application, it's actually wrong when you think about it.
And I'm not talking about doing kata as an actual self-defense any more than sticky hands is a great idea to be doing when someone pulls a knife on you. Like, I'm not talking about that. One of the reasons why I taught, I was saying I compartmentalize things. So when we're doing our kicks, we can do the kicks from a leaning forward stance. It's great. It's awesome. But we also do kicks in a sparring sense. So we'll do it like kickboxing. We'll chamber to the front instead of chambering, in the traditional chamber. Why? Because it doesn't leave your groin open to be slapped around like a speed bag. So that's what I'm talking about.
Sorry, Mark. I'm still struggling with your reference to muscle memory. If I do kata look, I'm going to do Taiko Shodan or I don't care what kata you pick. Depending on the school you're in, I will take a basic kata from that school. And as a part of the curriculum of that school, I will do that kata 1,000 times. 1,000 times. So I will, you're right, I will be developing the muscle memory to do that kata or do that technique the way it's done in the kata. However, as soon as I take that and put it into a practical application, someone throws a technique at my head and I do a high block with two hands with a chamber because I've done it 1,000 times in the kata, I'm a dead man on the street because...
And
I
agree completely.
So I'm still struggling to understand the value of muscle memory that kata offers.
Because I'm talking about the individual, the snap and focus from it. And you guys were talking about this the other day, the twist, that whole ability to twist. So I don't know if you're familiar with how your forearm, the two bones in your forearm, interact with each other. But when you twist over like that, those bones actually rotate over each other. There's, like, I have my own opinions on that. But that ability to be able to throw those techniques and have that looseness and then tighten right at the very end, that snap and focus, and then release again. So I think there is a place for it. I'm not saying that you can take someone who's really good at kata and stick them in a fight and they're going to do well. I'm not saying that at all. But it's another piece of the puzzle that allows you to be better at the overall thing you're trying to do.
It all depends on what that overall thing is. I'm enjoying listening to you guys be as boisterous as I usually am. And we are way off topic, but this is fun. Continue.
Well, we're not off topic. We're kind of in the neighborhood.
Completely off.
We're driving around the neighborhood of the topic. We're kind of in that milieu.
Yeah, it's loosely related to karate.
Okay, so hang on, guys. Let's draw this back in. The thing is, here's an interesting offshoot question. There's nothing preventing Mark or Lenny or any of us from changing these techniques.
Have done.
But then you can't.
And that's what I said.
No. Bob, take your stylistic thing and jam it up your jam hole. I know. Oh, no, I know what Bob's gonna say. He's gonna go, then you can't be claiming to teach the same style. So I understand that absolutely. So Mark, you said you're Shotokan.
Yeah.
Are there any techniques that you guys do that are specific to the Shotokan style that you'd like to change?
That's what I was saying earlier. Is I've changed. If someone comes to me, like John and I had a discussion, you and I have had discussions before about techniques, and when it's been proved to be ineffective for kata or for whatever, for what I'm trying to do with that particular technique, I change it. Because do they have a purpose? Can they be better? And I always try to make my techniques better. So I don't have a problem in changing things.
Better is such a vague term, though. And I don't. Sorry, I don't want to. I don't want to drag this down into a conversation we've already had for the last 20 minutes. But
well, I'll give you. I'll give you a specific thing that I changed. You were talking about low stances, right? I was focused on low stances because we were going to tournaments, and I'm low stance. Got to move in a low stance. It's a great thing. And then I had Sensei Angelo come up and push me over like I was a 2-year-old, and I went. Yeah, okay. Low stance doesn't work. So I got to find the way.
Hold on a sec.
All right, Mitch, you go first. You take him to task first, and then I'll take him.
Okay. There is no stance that if you stand in it in a static way that you won't be pushed out of it. Doesn't matter whether it's high or low. The problem is with humans, we only have 2 legs. No matter what stance we take, there are more directions we're unbalanced in than we are balanced in. And it doesn't matter how high or low your stance is. If I'm in a very low front stance, I am going to be off balance on a 45 degree angle relative to the direction of my feet. If I'm in a horse stance, doesn't matter whether it's high or low, I am going to be off balance front to back. So the notion of high stance versus low stance, one works, one doesn't, because I'll be off balance in one versus the other, to me has no validity, because it doesn't matter how high or how low your stance is, depending on the direction I push you, you're still going to be off balance.
Agreed, but what is the stance? The stance is for something that is directly in front of you, depending on which stance you're looking at. So for leaning forward stance, someone pushes directly in front. If your stance is really low, you can't move. Like you said, you get pushed off on a 45. If your feet are more directly in line with your shoulders and your hips, that's not as big of an issue. And I think that's what I saw. That was the technique as I saw the weakness in it, because we were trying to move forward and those techniques were coming in straight on. So we need to fix that problem. And I know the thing I like about karate is there's always something different. There's always someone who does it slightly different. And sometimes those techniques are slightly better than what we do. So I don't have a problem in modifying what we do. And sometimes I'll just show them. So this front kick, we can do it this way, this way, this way, this way, and this way. And I just
I gotta take you to task about that, Mark.
Sure.
How can you call it Shotokan if you feel free to change whatever you want?
I was gonna bring that up, but not necessarily in contradiction to Mark, but just in general, because we've touched on that in podcasts before. Like at what point, like even with Lenny teaching now, it's like at what point do you claim to teach a certain style if you've changed the style to a certain extent? Like at what point do you change it? Not necessarily Shotokan or Chido-Ryu or whatever the different karate styles. It's even if you just start to stray from karate and just make it more practical, at what point do you go, okay, this is a karate school and this is this style, or it's a martial arts school and we embrace all styles? Do you know what I mean? Like it's almost like, in my mind, personally, I just think MMA, you go in, it's MMA, and you can say it's this focused. So we teach MMA, but it's a karate base. It's MMA, it's a jiu-jitsu base, or something like that. And then you decide how much tradition you want to bring into it, or all that sort of stuff. It's a tough road to follow. Like if you want to do a certain art, it's how much do you want to change the art to make it practical? How much do you want to keep it to make it traditional?
Well, I call my club a martial arts club. So I try to leave it more of an umbrella term. We will do a little bit of everything. I completely welcome black belts and even practitioners, regular Q belts from any style to come in and participate with us and do what we do and show us what they do and how they do it. What I do, like even my katas, I've got some Chitoru, I've got mostly Shotokan, but I also have some Goju-ryu in there. Because I call it Shotokan because that's the base. And if I say to people, I do karate, and they say, what style? And I tell them, I do a little bit of Shotokan, mostly Shotokan, a little bit of Chitoru, a little bit of Goju-ryu, as well as kickboxing.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And that's how I say it. I don't purport to be a traditional club. I'm not, in any way, shape, or form. But for me, it's about just experiencing the art itself and the camaraderie behind it.
Look, how do you argue that? I mean, the joy of the martial arts. And look, we can get mired down in discussions of this technique versus that technique versus kata versus self-defense versus practicality, blah blah blah. But at the end of the day, it's the joy of exploring all this that I think draws us all. Oh God, I'm getting all nauseous here. It draws us all together. No, honestly, that is
the point of it. Like I said, exactly, if I went back to a karate class now, I'd be all up in the chambered fists and the low stances, and I'd eat it up and I'd relish in it and I'd enjoy it. I'm too old to be doing shit that's all about practicality. Like sometimes you just want to do something you enjoy.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with every corner of what we're talking about. We might get caught up in the discussions about points of logic of this versus that, but look, at the end of the day, we just get together, we train, we work out, and we take what we love and we leave what we hate, and that's all there is to it. Okay, we've got a couple of more talking points to get through.
Yay!
a couple.
Any high
notes? I was just going to say, did we exhaust everything? Or
no, we've gone through three. We've gone through three and there's 13 of them.
Right. Did we agree for all the listeners that those techniques need to be changed? So we've set the precedence now that shit needs to be changed. So any instructors listening to this, you need to change your shit.
Anyway. Okay, let's go. There's a couple of more I want to hit on. We're at almost, we're almost 2 hours in. So I want to make these ones reasonably not controversial. These are all about individual memories and your perceptions on yourself as a martial artist. Let's go around the table. We'll start with Bob. What is your biggest martial arts regret? And I know that's a very broad term, and it leaves a lot of room for interpretation, but that's kind of the fun of the question. So, Bob, your biggest martial art regret?
What immediately springs to mind is that I was so blindly loyal to one person's vision for so long, but at the same time, there was a value in that, so I'm hard put to say that it was a mistake. I'm conflicted about it, and enough said.
Yeah, this one took me a couple of days to get a handle on, so this is hard for me to say. It's not being more appreciative of my own progress through the martial arts as I was progressing through it. I have a very hard time perceiving myself as having value. It doesn't matter what corner of my life I talk about, and especially the martial arts, because it's been such a huge part of my life. I think I wasted a lot of time coming up through the ranks and through my black belt years. I think I devalued myself far too much.
Is that like a self-esteem problem?
I think you nailed it. I think you gave yourself the adamant amount of credit.
Terry goes, no, you sucked. It's fine. Fucking guy. Jesus Christ. Thanks for coming out, Darren. God damn. way to wreck my heartfelt moment there.
No. Anyway,
no, I can't now. Anyway, so look.
Is that a self-esteem thing?
It absolutely is. And I want to... Look, this is a really hard line to draw. You watch guys walking around with their chest puffed up going, look how great I am. And I think that's every bit as bad as what I do.
Do you not think it's weird that the amount of people that were inspired by you and you don't see it, and you walk around thinking that you're going astray somewhere?
How people perceive you is different than how you perceive yourself. And
I know, but somebody with intelligence should be able to see through all that.
Thank you very much. Well, look,
that's not what I meant.
Either I'm a dick or I'm stupid. Thanks, Darren.
Not what I meant.
Anyway, look, I don't want to turn this into like a self-examination seminar. All I'm going to say is my biggest regret is that I didn't appreciate the joy and the progress I was making through the martial arts as I was making it. I appreciate it now, looking back. I wish I had appreciated it more at the time. Lenny, biggest regret?
I have two. One is similar to what Bob said, having the blind devotion to one style or one person for so long that I didn't branch out earlier. And the second is not standing up to the bullshit and egotistic attitudes that came with an awful lot of the political shit that surrounded martial arts. And I wish I eventually did. And almost ostracized myself from organizations, but I'm glad I did, and I'm sorry I didn't do it earlier, and I'm sorry I didn't go to and I'm sorry I didn't go to Thailand earlier. very much the first two, though. That one instance came to my doorstep a few years back when I had a guy going for Shodan, and a panel of black belts arrived on the night who I didn't even know who were coming, strangers didn't know who came in, and fucking laid the law down, and I got a little bit kind of caught rabbit in the headlights, and by the time it took me to stand up, I was kind of shit, I shouldn't let that happen, and that was the icing on the cake for me, and I'm sorry I didn't distance myself from all that nonsense earlier.
Okay, I'm gonna take back what I said earlier. My biggest regret, Lenny, thank you for saying what you just said. My biggest regret is my cowardice in not standing up to what I know is wrong thinking in the martial arts. I'll just leave it at that. Darren, go ahead.
I suppose this is kind of a vanity thing in a way. My biggest regret is I was so into exploring all the different martial arts and just trying my hat in everything that everywhere I went, I was always just average. Because I was always the new guy in every club and every different style. And I kind of wish I had concentrated on one style and perfected that. Not necessarily stayed there, but at least brought that to the other club or the other style I went to. So I'm all about MMA and I'm all about branching out and everything, but even the MMA guys, like you come from a wrestling base or you come from a kickboxing base or something like that, so they're always really good at something and you can recognize that. It just seems like everywhere I go, I was always just kind of the new guy and you're trying to learn that new style. And it doesn't matter how good you were in the style before that, you're just a newbie there. And I always felt like I was always the underdog everywhere I went. And I kind of regret that I didn't perfect any one style to be able to kind of carry that around.
It's a total vanity thing, but that's
the answer to that question.
Is that a self-esteem thing too?
Yeah, probably. Oh, 100% probably, yeah.
Well, sorry, Mark, before we go to you, I want to ask Bob. Bob, you've dabbled in a pile of martial arts, judo, karate, aikido, kendo. Do you ever regret that you didn't do any of them, as Darren said, to a greater degree, that you didn't gain a greater proficiency in any of those martial arts? Or are you perfectly content with the fact that you just dipped your toes in a bunch of different lakes?
Dude, how long was I in Chitaru Karate? That was 30 years? No, 30 years doing one thing. It's a law of diminishing returns. After 20 years, each year after that, you're going to get less and less out of it.
Yeah, but Bob, the question is, do you look back on any of the martial arts you practiced and say to yourself, I wish I was better at that?
Well, who doesn't? When you put it that way, of course I wish I was perfect at everything. But no, I love my life and what I've done and the things that I dabbled in, and it's great.
I just to reverse that, like you talked about the 30 years there. When I first branched off, like the very first club I went to, it was almost like I had never trained before. It was so different. And I felt like the first, and I didn't do it for 30 years, but I felt the first a number of years that I had done in that had no effect on what I was now training in. It was almost like a wasted 10 or 20 years.
Okay, let's go to Mark. Mark, your biggest martial arts regret.
See, I try not to live with regrets because I'm where I am right now in the martial arts because of everything that's happened to me. So I really have a hard time looking at anything and saying, well, I regret this. I guess for me would be just not thinking like Bob, not Bob, like Darren said, are you good enough? It took a long time for me to feel comfortable in my own skin as a black belt. There was no grading I ever did that I went, oh, I deserve this grading. I always went into it going, what the hell are they thinking?
Like, yeah, why I'm with them on that one.
Yeah, and I'm like, and the only time that I really started, and it wasn't about me, there was another person in the club grading, and they went up to Sensei Brian, and they said, I'd like to just tell you that I don't think I'm ready to grade, because he had put him up for grading, and he looked at him and he went, so you're calling me a liar? And he's like, no. And he goes, well, I think you're ready, and if you're telling me not, that means you know better than me.
See, that's Mark brings up a really, really interesting point, because I've had, sorry to cut you off, Mark, but
no problem.
I've talked to a lot of students over the years who all have concerns about whether they're ready to progress through the ranking structure at a club. And my perspective has always been, look, if you're a student at a club, either you trust your head instructor or you don't. And if you trust your head instructor, then you really do need to surrender your perspective to theirs. If they think you're ready, if they say you're ready to progress, then you need to accept that. And if you don't trust them enough to make that judgment, you're at the wrong club. Go to a club where you do trust the head instructor enough to make that judgment. I agree with that wholeheartedly. You need to put some faith in the people you're training under. And if you don't have faith in them enough to believe them when they talk to you about your own ability, because you can't be objective about your own ability, then maybe you shouldn't be at that club. We
sound like a bunch of people who have self-esteem issues. And I just can't help thinking about the opposite of the spectrum, where people think they're better than they actually are.
I was just thinking that too.
And there must be a ton, of those people.
And there fucking are. I was just thinking that. I was thinking that, Bob.
But you know what? People of like mind tend to congregate together. So there you go.
Because you right. get, I've been in situations
welcome
where.
Welcome to the Losers Club.
I see people that are going, yeah, there's a grading next month. I'm into that. You're like, ready. Oh no, fuck, I'm totally ready. I've been doing this. No, fuck, you're not ready, tit. So yeah, there's the totally opposite spectrum.
All right, look, guys, we're running out of time. We're going to jump to the 13th talking point.
Deadly.
So again, look, we'll start with Bob and myself because we've had a little time to think about this. So here it is. Overall impression, this is a, I don't even know how to answer this. Overall impressions of your life in the martial arts. Be as poetic and romantic about it as you want, but in as succinct a manner as possible, what are your overall perceptions of your, or impressions of your own time in the martial arts, Bob?
Fuck me. Question? Jesus Christ. You're going to wrap it up with this quick? Let's wrap this up quickly with some philosophical thing that can actually stretch for hours.
I think this would be a podcast on its own.
Exactly.
Maybe, looking back, it's been...
Well, we'll start here and we'll bleed it over into the next podcast. Go ahead, Bob.
It's been an incredible, wonderful experience. I loved every minute of it, and everybody I met, good or bad, who left me with impressions that either I was impressed with or taught me something. I'm just filled with joy and gratitude looking back on this. It's wonderful. I'm filled with happiness.
Look, my perspective is exactly the same as Bob's. There's been ups and downs and positives and negatives. I could not continue to do. And look, I still train to this day, as most of us do. I would not be continuing to do this if I didn't find so much joy and so much satisfaction in doing it. Now, the definition of what brings me that joy has changed over the years, but it doesn't matter. There's still joy in doing it, and I couldn't be more happy and grateful and just absolutely euphoric about my history and where I am right now. Lenny, go ahead.
Kind of case in point, how could I not be more grateful, because it's now my livelihood, and I keep a roof over my head, because 7 days a week I have a dojo that's open full time, not just with my own style but with different martial arts under my roof. It's also the friends I've made, and this is testament to it, without being cheesy about it. Here we are, five of us sitting on a podcast thousands of miles apart, 2 years into a podcast discussing martial arts. Like, how could you not be thankful? And every week is, and every day is still a learning day, and there's still so much more to take in, and you just don't grow bored of it. You just what else can you say,
Darren?
Yeah, I think I go in like mood swings. There are times where I equate everything that Lenny just said, like you can't help but be grateful and everything's great. And there's times where I'm kicking my ass that I didn't take it more seriously at certain times. I didn't dedicate more shit. I didn't compete more. All kinds of stuff. So for me, a lot of time it's conflicting. If I'm in a positive mood, I have nothing but the best feelings whatsoever, just for all the reasons everybody said. And there's other times where I look back and go, why didn't I do this? Why did I slack off in this? You know. So it just depends on the mood I'm in. Overall, you couldn't touch it. I wouldn't change anything. But when you look back, there's like a million things I'd change. If I was to, as a kid now, and know what I know, would I take a different approach, a different attitude, different arts, the whole thing? 100%. I do things completely different. But I also don't regret the path that led me to here. So it's just constantly conflicting, just depending on the mood I'm in.
Okay, Mark, last word on this topic. Go ahead.
Well, hard to follow all that. I have to say, like, I've unfortunately had some of the most darkest times when my sensei passed away. It was extremely difficult for me to move forward, and I've got to thank you guys at Jewish able to continue to do what I did. You guys were amazing, and you know, Mitch used to come down and do little seminars with our little club, and it was amazing to watch him interact with the little people that primarily function in my club. I just had a 4-year-old who had her birthday on Saturday, so she just turned 4 on Saturday. So
just to interrupt. Do you not find, like, I remember when we were growing up and there was a cutoff age, I think. I don't think they taught anybody below the age of 7. For whatever reason, it was just the way it worked. But how do you find teaching kids that are that young?
Okay, so I had a 4-year-old. He was a couple of months before he turned 5. And he came out, and if I corrected him, he cried. If I talked to him, he cried. If I looked at him, he cried and ran away. And He's now 17 years old, and he's one of my black belts. And he's a wonderful young kid. Those are why I do it. And I had a toddler class, and that's where the whole concept of doing the chicken dance at the tournament was for. Because with the toddler class, what we'd do is we'd finish at the end of the class, and we'd do the chicken dance, and we'd do another dance. And people used to ask me, why do you do that? And I said, it teaches them to learn. It's there. It's a kata for them. They don't know how to learn. They don't know how to pay attention. So you make it something that they like, they enjoy. They get the physical fitness. They get the ability to learn, to work in a group, to pay attention. And then they transition and then into the later classes. Now, since COVID, I've had to combine, which is why I've got younger people in my kids' class. The times when I'm the most dark, when I'm feeling the worst about martial arts, I always get someone coming up to me and saying, I'd like to thank you. And I had a young lady who went to Orange Belt with me, and I don't think I ever heard her talk, not once, in the class. I never knew what her voice was like. And then just before COVID, I saw on Facebook, she was doing an interview in high school, and I'm like, oh, I gotta see this. And the interview was she was gotten the lead in Newsies. I don't know if you're familiar with that play, but the lead in Newsies, it's a singing part. And I'm like, oh, so I made a comment, you know, haha, I would love to go and see it because I've never heard your voice. And I thought I was going to get a sarcastic remark back. What I got was, next time I saw them, she came up to me and said, listen, can I hug you? And I'm like, okay. She goes, I would like to hug you. And her mom comes over. Can I hug you? I would like to thank you for giving me the confidence to be able to do what I loved. Karate was not what I loved. I really wanted to act and sing, but I was so scared to, and you gave me that confidence to be able to do it. Those interactions with my students and the ones that are not in my club anymore, they make me keep going.
You know what, guys? I can't think of a better note to end this podcast on. Let's bring this one to a close. Thank you, not only to everybody who was on the podcast. Thanks to Bob for coming up with those questions. We're only shy about 11 to actually completing all of them.
So I didn't afford it. I sent you a few weeks ago as well.
That's right. Exactly. So, Mark, thanks for coming on, man. I hope you come back again.
I would love to. I'd like to thank everybody for welcoming me on. It's been interesting listening to you guys have those conversations. I didn't really get a chance to listen to them before because my days are quite busy. But now I get to listen to your podcast in 5-minute increments. So it's... It takes me a while to get through a podcast, but it's been really fascinating to listen to your opinions. And most days I agree with most everybody except for Mitch. But
you know what? What do you do, huh? Okay, folks, we're gonna tie this one up. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Thanks for everybody who was on the podcast. Thanks especially to Bob for coming up with the talking points. Any comments, questions to my No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or drop an email to nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Thanks again, guys. We're finished for tonight. Much appreciated.
Nice.
We're done.
Thanks.
You do a round robin. You're supposed to give everybody's last thought. I had a whole last thought, and all of a sudden it's like, no, my podcast's done.